is a mashkiach in the yeshiva called Gaon Yaakov, and he was a big talmid of Aaron Yehuda Leib Steinman Zatzal, who was nifter about a year and a half ago, of Steinman. And he remembers when he learned under him at the age of 14 and a half, he was once walking his Rosh Yeshiva of Steinman back home from yeshiva after giving shir. And this boy, he was Rav Nachum Borenstein at the time, was 14 and a half. And they were going to cross a big street, and a little boy comes over to them, which is common in Israel. In America, it's probably, you shouldn't ask a stranger to cross you the street. But in Eretz Yisrael, in religious communities, it's done all the time. And a little boy walked over to Rav Steinman and said, could you cross me the street? He didn't know who he was. And Rav Nachum, who was 14 at the time, said to the boy, I'll cross you the street. You know, Rosh Shiva, I'll cross him the street. Rosh Shiva could wait over here. So Rosh Shiva said to him, okay, but first dive in, you should get to the other side, okay? And then you should get back, okay? Okay? And he asked Hashem, please help me cross the street safely and get back safely. And he crossed this little boy the street and came back. And then he said to Rosh Shiva, he said, is a Kaddosh Baruch Hu like a grandma? Like you have to ask him, you know, to help you cross the street? He said, a grandma you visit once or twice a week and you talk to her. Kaddosh Baruch Hu you talk to all the time. He said, I'll give you an example. He said, tonight, maybe it's already the afternoon. Maybe your mother already started cooking dinner. So to daven to Hashem for what she should make for you, maybe it would be like a tefillah shav, a wasted tefillah because it was decided already. But tomorrow morning, if you want schnitzel for supper the next night, daven to Hashem, you should have, your mother should make you schnitzel. If you want meatballs, daven for meatballs. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives you what you asked for, very good, thank you very much. And if he doesn't, so your Abba said no. Sometimes Abba says no. But ask for everything and thank him for everything that happens afterwards. Years later, when he reminded Rav Steinman of the story when he was 14 and a half, Rav Steinman then showed him this in the Rabbeinu Yonah. There's Rabbeinu Yonah on Mishlei. The pasuk of Mishlei, there's one pasuk says, one pasuk says, "B'tach el Hashem b'chol libcha ve'al binatcha atishain." Put all of your trust and bitachon in Hashem with all of your heart. Don't rely on anything else. With all of your heart, put in Hashem. Va'al binatcha says Mishlei atishain. Don't even lean upon your own thought and wisdom and understanding. Put all of your trust in Hashem. You have no chance to affect the outcome. We do ishtalos, but it's like we're putting on a show. Because we have to do ishtalos, you can't just sit back and rely on a miracle. But at the end of the day, it's not because it's actually in our hands. The result is completely in Hashem's hands. And you have to always realize that, even as you're doing everyday regular actions, put all of your trust in Hashem. And then the next pasuk starts, b'chol drachecha de'ehu. In all of your ways, know Him. So what's the connection in these psukim? So Rabbeinu Yonah over here, Steinman showed him, says like this. Sometimes people, they trust in Hashem. They know everything's in Hashem's hands. So when it comes time for like a big thing, like they're about to like decide on a big business deal, decide whether to choose this career or that career, or to marry this girl or not marry this girl, like big things, he gives the example, they're about to set sail on a big trip over the ocean and it's dangerous to sail over the ocean in those days. So then they remember Hashem and they daven Hashem, please make this work out. But with the little everyday small things like what you're going to have for supper and to cross the street, and so they think that's so little. Like, well, I don't want to bother Hashem with that. Like, I'll take care of that. I'll do that one myself. I'll use Hashem for the big things. But that's completely lacking in realizing how things work. We can't take care of anything ourselves. There's nothing that's in our hands. There's nothing that's bothersome or troublesome to HaKadosh Baruch Hu or harder or easier for Him. He's anyway giving you every breath that you take in, pumping your heart at every single moment. It's not like there's some things you could take care of yourself and not realize or think about Hashem for that thing. So therefore, for every little thing that we want, even when we're doing hishtadlis for it, we're going to cross the street. You have to check if there's the picture of the person walking or if it's a red light and you can't cross right now. But still, we put our full, complete trust all the time knowing that the results are in Hashem's hands, and to constantly train ourselves to be in a regular state of asking and thanking. Asking and thanking from Hashem all day long. That's their advice, the Chazon Ish also would give to a bunch of people that quoted the Chazon Ish. always, throughout your entire day, your whole life, be in a state of asking Hashem for things and thanking Him. Asking and thanking all day long. Because there's nothing that we could do on our own. And then, the Rabbein Yona continues, and he says, so why does it b'chol drachecha da'eu, in all of your ways know Him? So it's coming to include, even in the small little things, but it's also coming to include, let's say you're about to do an avera. And he gives the example, quote the Gemara, somebody's a ganav, and they're about to go steal. Daven to Hashem that it should work out. That you should be able to steal and not get caught. So the kid said, what? Daven to Hashem that I should be able to do that thing that He doesn't want me to do? He said, well, and you think you could do it yourself? You think you'll be successful doing it without Hashem? But He doesn't want me to do it. Okay, so let's see how easy it is for you to do it after you, when you have to ask Hashem to help you make it work out. We're not saying to go do the sin, but don't think you could sin on your own. Even to sin, you need Hashem's help. And you want the sin to go a certain way, you have to ask Him for that too. What you could also do, which is probably a better thing to daven for, is let's say you feel a complete lack of control and you're on your way to do a sin, whatever that is. In your heart, in your head, you know this is bad. I wish I wasn't doing this. Like, I want to serve Hashem. I want to be good over to Hashem. But I can't help it. My body's, really is going to make me do this. So you could also daven to Hashem at the time that you're on the way to the sin. Please don't let this work. Please stop this from happening. Make something get in the way. Make this not happen, even while you're going about doing it. But still, we never stop speaking to Hashem at any moment. It's not like there's a time that He's not there, He's not aware, He's not in control of whether it's going to work out or not. So we're always mean to be talking to Hashem. And that's b'chol drachecha da'eihu. In all of your ways, know Him. Don't ever stop having bitachon, even at the time that you're doing a sin. And that's just like mind-boggling, a whole other way of looking at things. There's an unbelievable gra, Megillas Esther, that when Esther is sitting at the table with Achashverosh and Haman, that she invited them both to the party. So it says in the Psukim, it says, "Vayomer Amelach Achashverosh, Vayomer Esther Malcolm." She said, "There's somebody that wants to kill us and kill my nation." So he said, "Who is the person that wants to do this?" Vatomer Esther, Ish Tsar V'Oyev, Haman Harazeh. So the Gemara says that the moment that Esther said, Ish Tsar V'Oyev, an enemy man, she started to point her finger at Achashverosh, an enemy, and Amalek came and pushed her hand towards Haman. But she was about to mistakenly point at Achashverosh. So asked the Gra, why would Esther have made such a silly mistake? Like, she's telling Achashverosh because she wants Achashverosh to stop Haman. And you're talking to the king. You can't point at him right now that he's the enemy. How did she almost make that mistake and point at Haman that he's the and point at Achashverosh that he's the enemy? And the Gra explains that everyone knows, and it's a Dover Pasha, that tzaddikim always see themselves as standing in front of a Kaddish Baruch Hu, and they're always talking to Him all the time, and they know that all outcomes and results are in Hashem's hands and not in anybody else's hands, and whatever Hashem wants is what's going to happen. And therefore, even when she's standing in front of Achashverosh and Haman, and she chooses her words, her nervousness, if it's there, or it's coming from standing in front of Hashem. And who she's speaking to at the time, and who's at the top of her head, is a Kaddish Baruch Hu. So in her head, she's thinking about what she wants Hashem to do, and how Achashverosh is the enemy and it's all in His hands. So it was like a slip-up, since she's thinking of Achashverosh right now, she started to point at him, because she forgot that she's talking to Achashverosh and has to point to Haman, so the Malach had to come and point her hand towards Haman. But so much so that even at that moment of a moment of tension, where you're standing in front of the king, she sees herself as standing in front of Hashem, and she made that slip that she almost forgot that Achashverosh was there and was about to point at him while talking to Kadosh Baruch Hu. It's with that level of consciousness that if somebody's going through all day long, in constant communication with Kadosh Baruch Hu, it could even lead to something like that. There's another Rabbeinu Yonah in Mishlei. There's a pasuk that says, Tochelas tzaddikim simcha. What tzaddikim, when they yearn for something for a long time, it's a simcha for them. So the Rabbi Yonah asks a question. What do you mean? But there's another pasuk in Mishlei, the Gemara talks about, that says, Tocheles memushacha machlas leiv. If you learn, yearn for something for a long time, and you don't get it, and it's for a long time, it can make you sick. It makes you sick. It gives you a heartache, and it can make you physically sick. Like when you're constantly wanting something to happen, waiting for it, wanting for a long time, and it's not happening. And if you've ever had it, you could think somebody really wants that person to like them. Somebody really wants to get into this. And for a long time, they're wishing for a specific thing and not getting it. It can make you sick, emotionally sick, physically sick, not well. And yet, there's a pasuk that says, but the yearning and the waiting and the hoping of tzaddikim brings them simcha. Why? Why should bring them simcha? It should make you sick. So explains the Rabbeinu Yonah, because people that don't have bitachon Hashem, that don't realize that everything's in Hashem's hands, so they're putting their trust and their hope on their self, on their efforts, on other people, and they're always counting on them, waiting for it to happen, and that could just lead to frustration and wear a person away. It doesn't build them and make them stronger. When your hope and your trust and what you're looking towards is Hashem, so it's constantly adding them simcha because they're getting closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They know they're even doing a mitzvah just by putting their trust in Him, and they'll get schar even by just this knowing that it's coming from Hashem the whole time. And at the end of the day, when it happens, if it happens, their simcha isn't just because they got what they wanted, like we spoke about, I think, yesterday. It's because HaKadosh Baruch Hu, like, He listened to me. He heard me. That's the biggest thing in their life, is the relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. That's what David HaMelech says in Tehillim, Kuftet Zayin. It says, Ahavti ki yishma Hashem es koli tachanunai. I loved it when Hashem heard me at the my voice, what I was beseeching. Why? Why was I so happy? Ki hita aznoli, because He turned His ear to me. It was when He got what He wanted. What felt so good is that Hashem listened to me even more. That gave Him the greater simcha than that He got what He was davening for the whole time. And therefore, when somebody is in this state of constantly talking to Hashem, waiting for Hashem's results, knowing that it's in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's hands, it's a completely different life experience. It's healthier, and he's happier. And even when you don't get what you want, you're still happier because you're doing a mitzvah right now. That's what we say every day in Pesukim Zimra. Yismach lev mevakshei Hashem. Yismach lev mevakshei Hashem. Those that are mevakesh Hashem, they have happy hearts all the time because they love asking Hashem for things. They love talking to Hashem and asking Him for things. I love talking to you, and I love needing you, and I love relying on you. That itself is a pleasant, unbelievable experience. Even if at the end of the day you end up saying no. There's a Gemara that says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu made the Imahos Akaros, right? He made the Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, and even Leah, they were barren. Their wombs were closed. And Sarah Imenu, the Gemara says, didn't even have a womb. And then only after a lot of davening for many, many years, they were given children. So the Gemara says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu mit'ave letfilatan shel tzadikim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu yearns for the tefillah of tzadikim. Lefikach asa otan akaros. Therefore, He made them barren. He made them barren so that they would daven, because the Kodesh Baruch Hu wanted the tefillos. So we see from here is that we think that we daven to fill up the lack. But the lack was there so that we daven. That was the point of the lack being there, to make sure that we daven. The point was to be in communication with Hashem, and that's what He wanted. That's what He's trying to draw out of us. When we're missing something, it's to elicit and arouse us. Remember to talk to Hashem and remember where everything comes from. Another point. Right now, we have to remember, and maybe we should have like a longer share in this. Hopefully the situation will change and it won't continue like this. But how the Jewish people react at a time like this, when there are missiles being thrown all over the place, and maybe we're nervous, or Stam are worried about other Jews, and how are we supposed to be looking at all this. There's a lot of different things to talk about on that topic. But one thing is very important. There's a Mishnah in Brachos that talks about the bracha that you make in certain places when you see them. Baruch sha'asa nisim li Yisrael b'makom hazeh. that blesses the Kodesh Baruch Hu that did nisim for Klai Yisrael in this place. And there's a brisa in the Gemara that lists a whole bunch of places. If you see this, make the bracha that Hashem did a nes for Klai Yisrael in that spot. And one of the things in the list, in the ninth parak of brachos, is the rock that Moshe Rabbeinu sat on during the war against Amalek. The rock that Moshe Rabbeinu sat on during the war against Amalek. What's the story over there? That after Kriyas Yamsuf, when they were traveling, Amalek came to try to attack them. And Akash Baruch Hu said that when Moshe Rabbeinu's hands are up, well, the Pasuk says when Moshe Rabbeinu's hands were up in tefillah to Hashem, then Klai Yisrael had the upper hand, they were stronger. When he put his hands down and stopped or weakened their, in the davening, so then Amalek got stronger. So at the end of the day, Klai Yisrael won in a miraculous way. So where did the nes happen? On the battlefield. But the Gemara says that make the bracha on the rock. Why? Asks the Marsha. Because that's where the nes happened. That was the deciding, that was the decisive battle. The battle is in the tefillah. The miracle was that Hashem listened to his tefillah. That on the battlefield, they won. That's obvious. Whoever Hashem wants to win, that's who's going to win. But what where the fight takes place is where the tefillah is happening. I thought of a mashal once, that nowadays, you know, that Chafetz Chaim was very into looking at modern inventions and learning what message could we learn from this new modern invention. And he learned lessons from the train at the time. And so one of the more modern inventions, I guess in the last 20 or so years, I don't know how bad, is drones, right? There's drones. What's a drone? I'm sure you could tell me more what a drone is. But I think, I don't know how many, but there's a lot of these hidden flying vehicles over Hamas territory and over Syria, whatever it is, which is picking up a lot of information from what's going on by the enemies below. It could shoot, some of them could shoot and blow things up. But you could have some, and during a time of a battle, I remember when Michael Goldman, Seth's brother, was in Gaza. So he was like describing to me how like there's somebody manning a drone sitting in an office in Tel Aviv, Yerushalayim, sipping a coffee, air conditioners on, just had a comfortable breakfast, you know, and sitting by a computer manning this drone that's telling them where not to go because there's terrorists over there waiting to shoot them, and where to go because there's nobody on that block. Because when you're looking at an area of view and you have all different perspectives from over there, they could tell you, they can map out for you where you should go and where you shouldn't go. And they're really the ones that are fighting and deciding the battle. Because without their information, you would go to all the wrong traps. And with their information, you could hit exactly on target. But the person who's in the room could, you know, air conditioning, he doesn't feel threatened by anything, there's no noise, you're comfortable, you can call your wife, you can call your kids, you could go buy some candy from the machine. So they could feel like, you know, like they could be very relaxed and slacking on their job, take a little nap. But other people's lives are going to be at stake. It could change the whole result. It has to be. Obviously, these people are trained to be at the edge of their seat and to realize that their job is super important. They're deciding on these soldiers' lives right now. This group is going to be hit or they're going to hit. And they could decide to shoot with the drone somewhere. So really, we're our tefillos and our Torah learning, the Jews, when we're keeping Torah and mitzvos, when we're learning, when we're davening, we're the drones. We're deciding whether the gun is going to hit the right spot or not, whether the strike is going to hit what they targeted for or not going to hit what they targeted for. If when the missile's coming in, my wife told me that one of our kids, Ganenitz, said that somebody showed her a video that happened, I think, this morning. Maybe it's viral, I don't know. But that there was like, you see like this highway and there's like tons of cars driving. Suddenly like the street is empty for a second, a missile hits, blows up. And like nothing's hurt. But if it would have been like a second before, a second later, then there would have been cars in that spot. So what determines those things? What makes those differences? What makes that happen or not happen? That has to do with the schuyos of the Jewish people, if they're doing what Hashem wants or not. Kodesh Baruch Hu is deciding on all these things. We are not allowed, and it would be terribly mistaken, and it endangers us if we put our trust in anything other than a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Even soldiers in the army who are doing good and important work and they're putting their lives on the line and they're doing, you know, a mitzvah. But what's going to happen to them, and if they're going to be successful or not, is not in the hands of their skill or their intelligence. And we can't put our trust in them. We put our trust in HaKadosh Baruch Hu and dominate them to protect them, to make them successful. But when we start to remove our bitachon from HaKadosh Baruch Hu and put it onto something else, then Hashem says, okay, let's see if you could do it that alone. Let's see if just with that alone, without me, you could manage. And there have been situations that we could feel very threatened. We're completely vulnerable in the hands of HaKadosh Baruch Hu right now. We have nowhere else to turn other than HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There's a Mishnah in Sota that gives a whole list of simanim of what's meant to happen right before Mashiach comes, in the final days, how it just gets worse and worse and worse and worse and more dangerous and more distant from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the last thing in the list is V'ein lanu al mili she'ein ela al avinu shebashamayim. You know it because of whatever song was made out of it. But we have no one else to lean on other than HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So what is that doing in the Mishnah at the end? Like, it's giving you a little bit of Musar at the end of the Mishnah. So the Mefarshim would say, no. That's another sign of right before Mashiach comes, everyone will come to be aware and they'll see and they'll feel we have no one we can rely on. We can't trust anyone. There's no one who can save us. Nobody can help us. Just like the Jews before the miracle on Purim, where they were going to kill everybody, and they all were ready to fast and cry and daven for 3 days straight because there was nobody that could save them. They didn't know how they're going to get out of this mess. So before Mashiach comes, there's going to be a period of time where we're going to realize, and it's going to be that there's no one else that could save you or help you other than a HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's one of the simanim that Mashiach is about to come. So let us do that without having to be taught that. To put all of our trust in a HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to realize our security is on that. When we're sitting around in the basement, it's one of the reasons why it's inappropriate to go on a trip, let's say tomorrow, or to just go out and like, as if nothing's happening, is because it's insensitive, like Rabbi Olshan was implying 100%. So it was one time, there was a war during Bein Hazmanim, so the yeshivas were off. So there was some bachrim that went to Rabbi Yashiv and said, could we go on a hike or something like that? Rabbi Yashiv said, How could you go on a hike? If you want to go on a trip, so go to the hospital and visit the wounded from battle. But you have to be part of what's going on in Klai Yisrael time. You can't just ignore it and just go have fun. But another reason why is because at a time like this, to leave the computer which is manning the drone and leave them on their own now is when our tefillah and our learning is the most needed. Now is the time, people talk about, I want to do something for the country, I want to do something for the nation, I feel like it's selfish if I, whatever. Okay, so it's selfish to just schmooze in the base or start looking around at different things on the phone when there's a Gemara in front of you and you're saving the Jewish people with your learning and helping them. We have a book, a sefer, we have a Chumash, and we have Torah Shabbat Peh, we have all the Gemara and Shas that talks about what saves the Jewish people and what hurts the Jewish people. Story after story in Tanakh, and Sefer Yeshua, Sefer Shoftim, repeated over and over again. When they went in the ways of Hashem, so then Hashem saved them from the enemies. When they went away from the ways of Hashem, then they were at the hands of the enemies. It couldn't be repeated more. There couldn't be more hundreds of Chazals that really we should have a Shira on some of them. But there's no mistake to be made that our safety and security is in the hands of Hashem. And Hashem makes his decisions based on our mitzvos and our zechuyos. And every Jew can make the difference. So we should feel right now on the battle lines. We have to be that person that is in the air conditioning. We have the coffee. It feels relaxed. But you have to know that it's the deciding factor could be in your hands right now for that soldier or for that soldier. There was that unbelievable story that probably you heard it. I think they once went up on the computer. Somebody put it out where there was like a lady. In the last war, so they gave out names of a lot of soldiers, thousands of soldiers, and everybody adopted a soldier and davened for them every day. But you know the story. And then there was like a lady, she had this name, she was always davening him during the war, and she always wanted to know what happened, was he okay, what happened, and she didn't know. And then one day, like a year or two or so later, she went to Israel with her husband to visit, like any Jew goes to visit Israel, and she went to some restaurant somewhere in some city, like not Yerushalayim, somewhere in the north, whatever. She went to a restaurant, she went upstairs with her husband, and the waiter came out and took their orders, and she just randomly said, like, oh, what's your name? And he said, Amir, let's say, I'm making that up, like, Amir, what's your mother's name? So he's like, Amir Ben Sarah Rifka, whatever it is. Amir ben Tzur, were you in such and such a war? He's like, yeah, she's like, I had your name. Like, I davened for you for like an entire like 3 months straight. Like, and I always wanted to know what happened to you. Like, and that's like, what were the chances that she would be in that place with him to see him right then? And she likes to tell over that story to show the message that, look, you wonder, like, was my tefillah helpful? Did anybody listen? And it's almost like Hashem let her meet up with him. Like, what are the chances that could happen that she'd be in Israel at that time, go specifically to that random restaurant, that he would be the waiter, that she would think to ask his name, that she'd even think to ask his mother's name? Or the Kodesh Baruch Hu was teaching us a lesson, giving us a little bit of a window of opportunity, as there are many windows of opportunities in all these kind of stories, to see that, no, your tefillahs are being heard, your tefillahs are being affected. And yes, you did help save, protect this person's life with your tefillahs. And we have to... Amunah is something you have to work on. It's not enough to know it. It means we have to train ourselves to live and to learn and to do mitzvahs with that type of focus. If you were planning on doing a certain bad thing, let's say, and then you decide, you know what, I'm going to stop myself for the schus of a soldier. I'm going to stop myself for that an iron dome should like hit its target if it otherwise wasn't gun or whatever it is. That's huge. That could, and you might not ever find out the results in your lifetime. And most of these things you don't. When you come to Shemayim, you might find out that you just saved an entire building of people, or an entire nursery, or a bus, or whatever it is. And you'll be credited with it, and you'll be like, why? Well, why I saved all their lives? How did I save all their lives? And then they'll remind you of what it is that you did. But this is this is reality and truth, and we don't see all of it, but we have to still live within it. Yaakov Avinu was telling Yosef that he's giving him Shechem, that he conquered Becharbi u'Bekashti with my sword and with my bow and arrow, says Unklus. So Unklus says, on my sword and my bow and arrow, Unklus says, Bitzluti u'Baba'uti, with my, and he used two different words for tefillos. In other words, Yaakov Avinu's sword and his bow and arrow were his tefillos. So the Mefarshim explained there's two different types of tefillos. There are tefillos that are effective right now, like a sword for what's right there in front of you. And then there are tefillos that are effective that you don't see the results, but you're sending an arrow to somewhere else and it's being effective. But not actually did Yaakov use a sword or a bow and arrow, or even if he did, that's not what was the deciding factor in his beating of Shechem. It was his tefillos, and he was aware of that, and he knew that what made all the difference. Another point. You're not ever able to measure out if your tefillahs were accepted or not. You're not able to see it. Sometimes you could see it because you exactly got what you wanted. But let's say you're davening for somebody to live and not to die. So first of all, you don't know how much more suffering they would have had and how much less they had because of your tefillahs. You don't know when they would have died and how many more days or weeks you extended their life and how valuable every single second of the extended life that you gave to them was with your tefillos. We don't know any of those things. You would think, oh, they died, our tefillos weren't answered. How do you know they weren't going to die 2 months earlier, or they were going to suffer even that much more? And even without that, that person is still going to Shamayim with the merit of having caused hundreds of people or tens of people to daven. And that, anyway, helps the neshama in the next world living eternally on a higher realm. So our tefillos are still going to what it is that we're davening for, even when we don't see. And you can never look to see, did Hashem answer my tefillah or not, because there's so much that we don't see. There is, in Tana de Be'eliyahu, he says the following, something that should be comforting to all of us. Eliyahu HaNavi says the following. He says, Kishani roa b'nei adam, she'ein b'hem tehila v'shevach shel Torah ma'isin tovim. When I see people, Jews, that have nothing you could commend them for when it comes to Torah and mitzvos, they don't do chesed, and they don't learn Torah. And I don't see in their fathers or in their ancestors any merits. Their ancestors also didn't do Torah and also didn't do chesed.
They
just for the very fact that they stand in front of me and talk to me and pour out their hearts to me, I'll listen to them and I'll do what they're saying and I'll give them double, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says. In other words, irrelevant of whether somebody is deserving, if somebody has any merits of Torah, mitzvahs at all. When somebody pours their heart out in front of Hashem, Hashem still listens to them and gives them what they're asking for. And that even goes for Rasha'im. That even goes for Rasha'im. And Eliyahu HaNavi goes on in other places, giving examples of Rasha'im that davened and got what it is that they davened for, or got something else big in place of what they davened for. But nobody's tears get ignored. And nobody, it's never inappropriate to daven. Nobody could ever say, well, why should he listen to me? I just did this, I just did that. Davening and merits, they're connected because merits could help. And when you have a tzaddik, and he davened, so his words are more effective because of his merits. But when you're davening from your heart and you're crying from your heart, then it's irrelevant what your merits are, what your mitzvahs are, what anything are. If you're davening from your heart, then you're answered. The pasuk says in Parshas Mishpatim, it's talking about how Kadosh Baruch Hu answers the tefillos and the cries of the amana and the yasom. And so the Ramban explains, why is it that when a yasom, when an orphan prays to Hashem, or when an amana prays to Hashem, the tefillos are right away answered? And the Ramban explains, because with a number of very important special lines, but he says like this, he says, these people, kisha'ar ha'anashim, other people, yitrchu achrei moshiim shiyoshi'uhu, v'achrei ozim linkom nikmato, v'ulai lo yo'ilo. Other people have other people to rely on also. They could turn to their father, they could turn to their husband, they could turn to their good connections. And when they turn to Hashem, that's another effort that they're putting in. He's another address along with all their other forms of ishtadlus. But when somebody is lacking like the rock in their life, and that's not there, then all they put their trust in is Hashem, and that's why their tefillos are answered. So in other words, the power of a yatom and amana in their davening is a power that we all could have. If we don't rely on anything else, or if we are comforted and secure, because of any other reason other than knowing that Kadosh Baruch Hu is there to protect us and all the results are in His hands, that's what gives the power behind your tefillah, and that's why a Rasha has that same ability as anybody else, knowing that it's in a Kadosh Baruch Hu's hands. Okay, I see we're getting a little bit tired, so I'll just end off with one thing. There's a Gemara in Brachos that hopefully somebody quoted by now, and if not, it's good to end off a day of Yom Iyun of Tefillah with this Gemara. The Gemara says that there's four things that need chizuk tamid. There's a Gemara in Brachos, Lamed Beis Amid Beis, Tanu Rabbanan, Arba'at Tzrichim Chizuk. There's four things that always require effort. They're hard, and they're never not hard, and you always need to work hard in them. The Eluhein, Torah, as you've seen, learning Torah is hard every day. Umaisim Tovim, Tefillah is number three. So, Tefillah is always something hard. And Rashi says, on Tzrichim Chizuk, Shiyitchazek Adam Behen Tamid B'kol Kocho. Tamid B'kol Kocho. Being, davening well, and davening in the right way, is something that never becomes easy. It always requires effort, with all of one's might, to put into the fact that they're realizing that they're standing in front of Hashem, what their needs are fully in His hand, to recognize that He could change it now even. And that's something that requires effort all the time, to focus on the words. One of the things we say every single morning, the Ashkenazim at least, the Brisa that we read, the Mishnah that we read, from Peah after Birchas HaTorah is, Eilu Dvarim She'Adam Ocha Peratayim Olam Hazeh, V'Kan Keim Olam Haba, that you eat the fruits of it in this world, but the principle of the reward is still waiting for you in the next world. One of the things on that list is Iyun Tefillah, davening with Kavana. Just davening with kavanah, besides the results of getting what you daven for, but just the fact that you daven with kavanah in your lifetime, you reward it for it in this world, but it's a separate reward in Shemaim just for every single tefillah that you have. We should be zocha to constantly continue working on our tefillah from today and onwards.